IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I am Saurabh Todi, and I have with me my colleague Anupam, and we'll talk about an excellent policy that has been proposed by the Karnataka state government, where they are going to fix the prices of cabs. So first of all, Anupam, welcome, and how excellent is this policy?
Surely you jest, Mr. Todi.
Well, so just to give a brief background, like what exactly has happened. So the proposal there is to fix the prices of the cabs on a kilometer basis. And there is obviously going to be no discrimination between companies. And this is what all the companies have to follow. So first, Anupam, could you please describe like what this policy basically is and how bad is it?
Right. So for me, this policy is really the first kind of proof that time travel works, because we seem to travel back in time to 1840s, where such kind of policies were common, where you didn't have things like dynamic algorithmic pricing, where you didn't have on-demand cabs, where you didn't maybe have even a lot of private transport, right? So you had maybe government-run buses and you fixed prices for it. And we seem to have taken that and transported it into the future where you have all of these things, right? So let me begin with just saying what it is. So what the Karnataka government has tried to do, without rhyme or reason, according to me, but what they've tried to do is they've just categorized taxis into three types. Right, based on the cost of the vehicle, and there's so much to unpack there, but they've just decided to categorize vehicles or taxis according to three types based on the cost of the vehicle, and then set a price at which they can charge, right? At which they can charge the customers. So below 10 lakhs, if the vehicles cost below 10 lakhs, you have a minimum fare for the first 4 kilometers of rupees 100, and every additional kilometer you can charge 24 rupees. If the vehicle cost is 10 to 15 lakhs, then minimum fare is 115, and additional kilometers about 28 rupees. Finally, if the vehicle cost is above 15 lakhs, then you have a minimum fare of rupees 130, and every additional kilometer is about 32 rupees that you can charge. Right, so this is fixed prices by the government of Karnataka.
Okay, first of all, how do you determine the price of the vehicle? Because obviously it changes every year because there will be depreciation and then there is inflation as well. Some vehicles are old, some vehicles are new. I mean, there is a lot to unpack, as you said, but like it's very basic stuff. And like you can have a much better vehicle, but much better maintained vehicle.
Correct. So, I mean, you could have, yeah. So when you bought a particular car, let's say you would have bought that car 10 years back and you would have paid above 15 lakhs. But right now, that same kind of specs in the market today would cost maybe less than 5 lakhs, right? So now you're still rewarding somebody for what they bought. That's part A. Part B, there's obviously so many more factors that go into the quality of a ride. If you're saying this, all of this matters in terms of the quality of the ride, then there's so many other factors than just the cost of the vehicle, right? You could have, for example, whether there's a well-functioning AC or not, whether the car is kept clean, whether you have water bottles that are given to you, for example. You can go all out to make sure that the car is comfortable. And I've had Uber rides where this has been possible, right? Where even though, let's say, the car costs less than 10 lakhs in a Tata Indica or something, but the driver has gone out of their way to make sure that you're made comfortable, right? The seats are good. It's well maintained. You have, as I said, you know, you're presented a water bottle. They're sensitive to whether you want music or not. They're sensitive to whether they put on the AC and so on. Whereas you can sit in a top-end car, which is, you know, high cost car, but then none of these things exist. They play loud music of their choice or are speaking on the phone, or they refuse to switch on the AC despite it being 38 degrees outside, and you can have a horrible experience. So all of that means that fixing a price based on the cost of the vehicle is one of the most ridiculous meticulous ways in which you can go about doing
this. So what, I mean, it is, you know, just the kind of default setting of the governments, you know, in India, sadly. But like, what is the idea here? You know, like, why fixed prices? Because, you know, these app owners are fleecing off the consumers, and consumers need to be protected. Like, poor consumers, they don't know how to deal with all of this. Like, what's the idea?
I don't think so. One, ascribing motivation is always a tricky business because you're strictly into, you know, now speculating, you know, into the arena of speculation, which I don't want to do. I mean, how can I speculate as to what the ministers, the honorable, wise ministers were thinking before what they wanted, you know, what they wanted to achieve? I don't want to speculate, but there are a few things, right? One, you could say, okay, is it really to do with consumer welfare? And if it is to do with consumer welfare, I just want to remind our listeners that we already had price caps in place. By the way, we had price caps in place. We had a whole bunch of extremely distortive policies in Karnataka against cab drivers and cab aggregators in order to help your consumers, right? Whether they're working, not working, that's an entirely different debate. But I'm saying we already had some of those things. Second, I think, you can really think whether these things are meant to help the end consumer, because the actual price that you end up paying with the new price fixing tends to be higher than what you would have otherwise paid. So there are lots of people who have done anecdotal data in terms of, you know, I paid 800 rupees to go to the airport under the old scheme, whereas under the new scheme, I'd end up paying 900 rupees and so on. So there's a lot of people who've said maybe shorter distances, this will work out cheaper, longer distance, just the market prices were cheaper, etc. So if there is so much ambiguity there, I'm sure they would have done their calculations as well. You really got to question whether this is in the interest of the consumer or not. Third, and I think this is what tells me, there's a precedence here. There's a unfortunately rather alarming political economy part dependence here, right? And that is to say that in Karnataka, all kinds of transport and transport policy seems to be driven by extremely strong lobby groups, right? So now I have to mention as a disclaimer that we are getting into speculative territory, but nonetheless, right, let's speculate. I remember 30 seconds back I said I will not speculate, but you know, yeah. Why not? Let's go into that, right? But we seem to have wave upon wave upon wave of policies regarding transportation in Karnataka, which is entirely driven by the existing lobby groups, right? So when, for example, Uber and Ola initially started autos, there was a huge backlash because the original auto drivers didn't even want Uber and Ola. So, you know, there was this thing and we made whole sets of policies to make it really difficult. Then we realized, okay, that we as in government of Karnataka realized, I don't know why I'm saying we, government of Karnataka realized that this is not the way to go. They say, okay, they came up with an entire draft policy for, for Uber and Ola, right? And then they realized something like two-wheeler taxis will affect all other kinds of things. So they put something there. Then they, you know, there was, for example, this entire bit about shared rides, right? Pool.
You can't pool. Like, you have to have a new one. Like,
so we've done lots of extremely stupid thing. Even today, for example, we don't have shared autos plying in Karnataka, because in Bangalore especially, because it again goes against some set of laws. We had a private bus network, as in something like Uber, but for buses, where enough people can just pool in together. We made laws against that. Then we had, for example, Quick Ride, which is, you know, an essentially cab pooling, not cab, but personal,
like, yeah,
car
you
pooling.
Can pool, like, if you're going to, let's say, Electronic City, you have 4 spaces left, you can say, okay, if anyone wants to go, please, hitch a ride.
And the world over, by the way, everybody's trying to encourage people to pool rides, saying, you know, get together, reduce the number, and no, we went and banned it. And
plus, right? It's a horrible traffic issue in Bangalore. So, like, you would want people, please take as many shared vehicles as you can.
I remember on that particular day in the newspaper, there was, you know, the top headline in the city page, whatever, was Bangalore city traffic costs X amount of this thing. And one particular junction, there was like a 4-hour stop, right? And just below, you're saying government of Karnataka bans these kind of shared rides. And I'm like, you got to be looking at the irony of this, right? Yeah. That it's got to stand out. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, maybe it doesn't, right? So then you have to start questioning, is it really the ignorance slash incompetence of our policymakers, or is there obviously something else at foot? And you'd be hard-pressed to conclude that there is a political economy here, right? So here, the political economy seems to be that there is a taxi drivers association, which is has both, I think, maybe members of Uber and Ola as well and others, because now they don't want to give as much of a commission to Uber and Ola. Plus, maybe they're thinking that Uber and Ola are not charging enough. So maybe they've lobbied for slightly higher prices. And you've got then the other taxi drivers, which are not part of the cab network. So I don't know who exactly is the composition of these, the taxi association. There's a Bangalore Taxi Association, Taxi Drivers Association.
There's so many, like there's taxi ones and there's like an auto one, and then everybody just tries to like have their own fiefdom protected. And also, I would like to like highlight, I mean, when we say, okay, government is trying to ensure that you don't get charged higher, it is also ensuring that you don't get charged lower.
Yeah.
It's like if I want to go and have a taxi and somehow that taxi guy is like, you know, I'll charge you 400, but the price floor is also 500. So I have to pay 100 extra. Right. Or it would go like through, okay, we'll do it illegally. So it just pushes people out of these formal networks of, you know, a cab aggregator. There's a safety issue. And then, I mean things will happen anyways.
Yeah, we'll discuss about the consequence of this, right? But since you asked about motivation, these are my best guesses of what it is. We don't know for sure, but this is what the government of Karnataka has done. And as I would just like to mention, which I've done already, that there is a precedence here, that there is multiple instances in the past where we've taken seemingly bizarre policies, stances against some of the cab aggregators and so on.
No, and again, it's something that is a like a trend also. Like we saw like a few months ago, even Delhi banned motorbike taxis just because of it's speculation, but because of the pressure of the like taxi unions or something. So it's just, and there's obviously a demand. I mean, I think it's people. Well, the government should also appreciate all these applications come up with shared auto, shared taxis, shared motorbikes, or even motorbike taxis, because there is a demand. There's a demand because people obviously want it. There is a demand because there is traffic. And just to like stifle it for like vested interests, which are not in sync with the interests of the broader public, is quite unfortunate, but not very new, as you've said.
Exactly. I mean, and this is, again, if you take a slightly zoomed out picture, it is entirely in the kind of scheme of things where you have an incumbent who doesn't like new entrants and therefore will lobby the government to ban it or slash make it difficult. We have seen this in the payment space. By the way, that's what Paytm did now. And now they seem to be in a lot of trouble. But we've seen this in the payment space. We've seen this in all kinds of manufacturing industry. You'll have lobbies against imports. You'll have lobbies against newcomers. You'll have lobbies against somebody else. And I mean, I think this is a well-known thing. But you really have to start expecting more from your government than just kowtowing to any sort of lobbying pressure or any sort of political economy pressures. You've got to do better than that. And we as citizens have to expect better than that from our government.
I agree. And again, I think this is quite unfortunate that we see that constantly happening again and again. But well, so can you explain like, what are the consequences? So we said it's a bad policy, it's going to impact us, but what are the consequences of this price fixing? Like, just...
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this might be my 453rd episode talking about what are the horrors of price fixing, but let me do it once again, right? But first, okay, even before we get into the exact the consequence of price fixing, you have to stand back and applaud at the hubris of the government to think that it can just fix prices and everybody will follow its new directions or its new diktats, right? Because it is one thing to say this is the maximum you can charge. Now, that is what a price control is, and that rarely works. When I say rarely, I actually want to say never. That never works. Now, it's an entirely different thing and takes an extraordinary amount of arrogance to imagine that you can fix prices at a particular price point and expect everybody to follow that.
And that you can even do it. I mean, the state capacity, we scream about it every time, is that even if you want to do it, like, you cannot do it.
Exactly. I mean, you can go on a national highway and you will find that there are big, massive 18-wheel trucks, or I don't know, 10-wheel trucks, which are coming in the wrong way, jumping signals and so on. And you have no state capacity to, you know, stop that. And here you want to go after each cab ride and check whether they're charging according to your fixed prices. I mean, that is an extraordinary amount of hubris, as I said, right? So that is, I mean, that is one thing. The second bit is, again, this is market interference at an all new level, right? As I said, Karnataka already had price control. So we had a price floor, we had a price ceiling, there was back and forth. By the way, I think our cab aggregators have some of the biggest policy teams, because you're constantly fighting with the government, right? Because they come and do some all sorts of nonsense things. And so now this is an all new level, because they want to not just put limits or ceilings, but they want to fix the prices, right? They say, this is exactly how much you will charge. Will it work? Absolutely not. And I'm not being tentative here, right? As a policy analyst, by the way, we are always told, you know, be tentative. You don't know the answers. No, I don't want to be tentative here. I want to say assuredly, with a lot of confidence, saying this will not work. Right? Because it's a historical precedence. Again, every single time that we have tried to pay fixed prices, it has not worked.
In anywhere. Like in any industry.
I'm not saying about taxis. Yeah, exactly. I'm saying about whether it's rent control, whether it is, labor fixing prices, whether it is fixing prices of movie tickets, whether it's fixing prices for, electricity,
even
water,
crops. Like
crops,
you have MSP. You have MSP, but that doesn't happen.
We're seeing what is happening now with MSP, yeah. Right? There's going to be more. So, fixing, I mean, those are, and by the way, again, I just want to, all of those are controls. Here we are fixing, right? So there's even more reason to imagine why it will not work. Second bit, I think, which is what will really, again, stand out as to why fixing price is wrong, in just one wand, right, or one magic signature under the new law, what it wants to do is ignore all of the complexities that goes into the price determination, right? So in a complex world, right, you can imagine you're booking a taxi at 9 p.m. on a Sunday is when the weather is good and so on. It's very different when you're booking a taxi at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. That 12 hours makes a huge amount of difference in terms of demand, supply, what are the conditions, etc. And then you add in, that's just the demand and supply. Obviously, on a Sunday evening, there's going to be less demand, maybe more supply, so the price will be different, as against a Monday morning where everybody is trying to get to work. I mean, not you, Saurabh, not 9 o'clock. You come into office at 12:30, waltz in
9:30.
without a care in the world and so on. But, you know, normal people who fear for their jobs and so on, try to come in on time. And so they're all looking for cabs and they want to get there. So very different demand and supply situation, right? That's part A. Part B, obviously, the amount of time it takes to reach there. So the same distance on a Sunday evening can be covered in half the time than on a Monday morning. So obviously, you've got to consider that. Then again, throw in other externalities or other
fuel efficiency, different cars. Like if you are driving rashly, it will cost more fuel. It's just,
And of course, so you can look at, as I said, the other things, right? About the condition of the car, whether you switch on AC, whether you have luggage, whether you do, a whole bunch of those things will matter again. Then finally, I mean, you can throw in weather conditions, for example, right? Whether it's raining, whether it's this thing, whether it's sunny, those things also matter. So, you know, in a wand, as I said, you're going to throw out all of this and say, no, I know what price you should charge. Right, which is ridiculous.
Which they don't know.
but that's what they're trying to do, right? They've come up with a magical number and say you should charge this. Now, in a way, again, this goes back to our earlier speculation, because they are trying to mimic the kind of pricing structure that ordinary cabs have without the dynamic kind of algorithm or the autos have, right? So autos, by the way, I mean, one of the reasons, so to immediately see why this will not work, check where it's already been in practice. Autos have had a fixed fare, right? 25 rupees per kilometer for the first, 4 kilometers. And then, no, not four. I have no clue. First 2 kilometers.
Because nobody follows it. We have no clue because nobody ever follows it.
Exactly. It's not because we're so elite that we don't travel by auto. No, it's because we've sat in many autos where it's never followed. They quote a price, you agree or you don't agree, and then you move on, right? So, I mean, metaphorically move on, because physically you won't be moving on. You'll be staying in the same place.
Yes.
Because you wouldn't have gotten the auto. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you can see that you have autos with fixed prices, right? 25 rupees for the first 2 kilometers, and then X rupees after that, etc. But that never works, right? All of the negotiations and bargaining is done outside of the meter, and or the meters are rigged, or you have to pay extra on top of the meter. So that's what things like 1.5, 3 times, sir, 200 rupees extra kodi. I have to explain this for non-Kannada speakers, but yeah, you know, give 300 rupees extra on top of the meter, etc. All of these are common things, right? Which any Bangalorean will say, will be very familiar with. So that kind of pricing system will not work. And if that's not worked for autos, why can we imagine that it'll certainly work for taxis?
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
Same time, it also is like not very helpful to even auto or taxi drivers, right? If an auto person says that, okay, I want to go to this area where I will not go usually. I mean, these are very basic concerns, which again, it just reflects how harebrained is this policy. So if I'm being feared that I'll be charged more, even the taxi person is like, if I want to charge less or more, my freedom is also gone.
Correct. And there might be genuinely instances where, for example, somebody is having a very slow day, they're not getting any customers, and they'll take up a ride, even if it is just to go towards home, even if it is not, you know, very high, and they might take up that ride. Now you've, you know, removed that option for them, right? You're saying you have to charge this much. Or on the other hand, as I've said, if it is peak hour traffic, you want to charge more. Yeah. Because that's the value of your time, right? Oh, by the way, that's another big gripe that I have in Karnataka. So one of the, again, previous stupid policies that we had done before this was we removed the option to charge people for time. So we could only charge based on distance and not time, right? And so, obviously, so if anybody here in our listeners, and I'm assuming that most of you would be very familiar with this concept, the reason why you don't get a cab during peak hours is because nobody is allowed to charge for time. So if you would travel 10 kilometers, right, on, as I said, on a non-peak hour, like Sunday night, and it takes you, you know, it's a breeze. You can just go very quickly. It takes you, let's say, I don't know, 45 minutes to reach that, or 1 hour to reach that duration. And you'll be charged a particular amount. Now, you're supposed, the government expects you, the cab driver, to charge a similar fare for Monday morning at 9 a.m. And so, obviously, on Sunday night, it's going to take you 1 hour for 10 kilometers. On Monday morning, it's going to maybe take you 2.5 hours. And yet, that value for that additional 1.5 hours is not accounted for. So now tell me, which driver wants to drive at peak hours?
You have actually answered the question which I was wondering. Like, in the last year or so that I have been in Bangalore, I was like, I cannot get a cab at peak hours. And I was like, maybe my app was malfunctioning, but I cannot. It is just not possible. And that's a very good reason.
Yeah. So again, by distorting the pricing system, you've completely removed the incentive for anybody to drive during peak hour. So if I get the same money as at peak hour versus non-peak hour, then why would I drive during peak hours, which is going to cost me more, which is going to irritate me more, frustrate me more, is so much of a bigger pain. Why would anybody want to travel why would anybody want to drive and offer their services during peak hour, right? So it doesn't work. So again, this seems like I'm going back to Econ 101, but price acts as a signal, price acts as an incentive. So as I've said, by fixing prices, you've removed this incentive part. But the signal, again, is very important. Right? When you have dynamic pricing and there is surge pricing in one area, it signals to the other driver saying, head there, you'll get a better price. It signals to the consumer saying, right now there's a huge demand, so why don't you stave off? Right? Why don't you wait for it to come down? Both of that will no longer work when you have fixed prices. Right? When you have fixed prices. So now there could be instances where, for example, you get out of a cricket match at Chinnaswamy Stadium, right? And everybody wants taxis. Nobody will get it because that signal is not being driven out, right? That signal is not being spread across the city, right? Now, in normal dynamic pricing, you'll suddenly have a huge shoot up of prices, right? Outside Chinnaswamy after the match. And I mean, actually, if it is an RCB match, when RCB inevitably loses, most people will end up going to the bars nearby on MG Road. But let's say some people want to go home, there'll still be a hike in prices, right? There'll be a hike in prices that gives a signal to other drivers. So there'll be drivers in and around the city, maybe in a 4 kilometer radius, who'll say, oh, you know, match has ended. Why don't we go there? Now, they don't need to know anything about cricket. They don't need to know about Chinnaswamy Stadium. They don't need to know about why RCB has lost. But I'm assuming they would have lost, right? Why RCB would have lost. They just will know that, okay, I have to head there. Now, that no longer works when the signaling system is gone.
True. And I think, again, this idea that, you know, this is new, or these bad apps have done this. This has happened. This has been happening for, I mean, these are not new or, you know, modern concepts. Even if you were taking an auto, just hailing an auto on the road, the auto person will quote a price depending on which area he or she is. What is the day? Is it a weekend or is it like a festival day? You know,
because they're all calculating,
exactly.
And at the end of it, they're all calculating their opportunity
exactly.
cost, right? Which is to say, what is a better use of my time for that time? Can I get a better fare than this? They will charge at least something that compensates for their opportunity cost, right? So if you want to travel 10 kilometers and in, you know, peak hour traffic, and you know that the maximum they're going to get from you is 250 rupees, they would not going to say yes, because they know that if they wait for some time more, they might get a ride for 15 kilometers for, I don't know, 700 rupees, right? So
Anupam, now that we have established, and not that it needed to be said, but it's a very bad and unplanned policy. So if you magically become the...
Heaven forbid. Don't even complete that sentence, because I don't want to imagine dealing with all the lobbyists and so on. But
so
yeah.
If you were in the government and you were like, you're in charge of revamping this policy, what would you do?
So... One, I mean, the obvious thing is, you know, ignore the political economy. There is so much more that even for the political economy, by the way, there's so much more to gain by keeping a large set of population moving happily than by constricting their movement. I mean, you've got to be clever enough as politicians to understand that transport and mobility are sensitive, touchy topics. And so therefore, by doing really ridiculous policies such as this, you're going to make a lot of people unhappy. So that's got to be the first thing, right? You got to just understand that. But I think, yeah, beyond that, the dynamic algorithm systems work when there can be a sudden increase in supply to match the sudden increase in demand and therefore the sudden increase in price. So if there is a surge pricing, and I would definitely allow for complete surge pricing. Okay, so first and foremost, I will not interfere with the pricing system. So let surge pricing work. Now, immediately you say, okay, you know, surge pricing, what happens then, right? The way that the surge pricing, the entire idea of surge pricing is this, that, okay, prices go up. Firstly, other cab drivers will come there, right? It sends a signal. So then it immediately kind of makes it easier for you to get a cab. There's more supply. But it also reduces demand. More people will say, okay, can I take, you know, let's say you and I, we are, you know, if we want, instead of 2 kilometers waiting for a taxi, we'll say, you know what, can we walk it? Maybe not you, but let's say, you know, healthy yes. People who are...
who care about healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. Not Channa Bhatura eating, right? But let's say you would say, okay, can I walk that 2 kilometers instead of waiting? Or can I get public transport? Or can I get the metro instead, etc., right? So I think all of that will happen when you allow for this price dynamism. But second, not just existing cabs. And for me, this is one of my pet peeves, right? Why do we have this silly distinction between, you know, yellow board and white board and so on? In an ideal system, right? In an ideal system, if I'm sitting at home, you know, economics professor is sitting at home with nothing to do, which happens quite more often than what you think because I'm useless, right? If I'm sitting at home, I finished...
Glad that economists do acknowledge that.
Of course, right? But if I'm sitting at home doing nothing and I see, you know, I have the Uber app and I suddenly see, okay, there's a huge surge in prices in Kormangla, about 5 kilometers away, I should be able to just get on my car, go there, do a couple of rides, get enough money, you know, maybe to spend on beer, and everybody's happy, right? Supply is increased, I get a little bit of money, and the problem is solved, right? So people should be allowed. Now, I've listened to a lot of reservations about this idea that everybody should be allowed. And I think all of that can be solved, by the way. It's just inherently a resistance towards change, right? Oh, but how can we allow people? No, we can, because the onboarding will be done by companies
plus,
called
it's
Uber.
It's not that all the yellow boat taxis have this, you know, airtight security system.
Exactly.
And you know everyone who owns the car, and the one who owns the car is the one who is actually driving. So, because 90% of that is not the case.
So you don't have to worry. Exactly. You don't have to worry about all of that. You have to put the complete onus of safety and security on the company, on Uber, and Uber will do all that it can to basically check for these things.
Because they have incentive, because they want to run their app.
Exactly. So what they will onboard, they will make sure that your car is this thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they have a feedback system. They have all of that, right? So trust, I mean, make this regulation. It is sounds harsh, but make this regulation, put the onus on Uber, put the onus on Ola, and let them figure it out. You don't have to do all of these things. And that way, magically, you will see that supply will increase, surge pricing will go away, in fact. And that's the whole point. I mean, I remember reading this interview by one of the top policy persons in CEO of Uber, and they said that surge pricing is meant to be a temporary thing, as in temporary, right? At that moment, it will surge, supply will increase, and therefore, you know, that will go away, right? So make that happen. For me, this distinction makes no sense. If it is you're worried about safety, there all of those things can be addressed. Right? Just get over that resistance to change. So that's probably one of the main things that I do. And then all of the other things that we spoke about, right? Allow for pooled rides, allow for shared autos, allow for all of those things. For a city like Bangalore and maybe all cities in India, the answer always is all of the above.
Do you need
taxis? Yes. Do you need shared taxis? Yes. Do you need premium Uber, whatever, like Mercedes-Benz as taxis? Yes. Do you need buses? Yes. Do you need metros? Yes. You need all of it and more, perhaps, right? So don't throttle anything. The market can figure these things out, right? Just allow it to work. Allow it to function without having the hubris to think you know what people want. You know what price they should charge. You know how people value their own time, or you know how people value their own work and effort and their car and so on. People are clever. Mm-hmm. Trust them. Mm-hmm. They will figure these things out.
No, I totally agree. I mean, this idea, and this has been the struggle across countries, across different markets. But I think, our desire to, you know, just control everything and hoping that, you know, we can solve. No, I think people and the markets can solve a lot of things. But again, thanks a lot, Anupam. I hope that the government listens, and I think it seems like there's some indication.
I think there will be episode 454 where I will come and talk about why price controls don't work. Until then, see you all later.
Okay, thanks a lot, Anupam. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.